our initiative, too.
Well, Amy Padnani, I want to thank you so much for being with us, for coming up with this very important idea. We'll see if filling in the gaps of the past makes a difference in the presence in the future. But we're going to link to this remarkable special section at democracynow.org. It's called Overlooked. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. Coming up next is Positively Revolting. Ani welcomes activist Barbara Ford and takes your calls.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Enough National School Walkout on Wednesday, March 14th, 10 a.m. at Roseway Heights School in Portland. Enough is calling for students, teachers, school administrators, parents, and allies to take part in the National School Walkout for 17 minutes to protest Congress's inaction in response to gun violence. Again, that's Enough. National School Walkout on Wednesday, March 14th, 10 a.m. at Roseway Heights School, 7334 Northeast Siskiyou Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
And good morning, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your very own community radio station. This is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani, and this morning I am very happy to have Barbara Ford here in the studio with me. Good morning, Barbara.
Morning, Ani.
So, Barbara is an activist. She is a singer. She is an artist. She is a facilitator. She is a teacher. She's a therapist. She's so many things wrapped up into one amazing Wonder Woman. And I am always so pleased when you have time to join us on a Friday morning.
Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Excuse me. Now, my voice goes the way of, the cherry blossoms, actually, which are one of my biggest allergies of the year. So, you know, you get the little froggy voice for the next couple weeks. That's me. Thank you for joining us as we are looking at the world in dire straits, right? I'm just going to jump straight into this conversation because there's so much to talk about. We are involved in a world of pain. Mm-hmm. And we can see this in the fact that, the nuclear doomsday clock has jumped up to 2.5 minutes before midnight. It's the closest that those that watch these patterns believe that we have been to nuclear war since the early 50s. That blows my mind considering how prevalent nuclear war was in my consciousness as I was growing up under Reagan, mm-hmm. feeling very strongly like I wouldn't live to 20. Mm-hmm. That alone would give me great pause for looking at the world in pain. But then we see the signs of devastating climate change around us as we see the Arctic ice caps melting, as we see the incredible changes in the weather patterns around us that is just absolutely undeniable at this point. As we know that the damage is continuing to be done, we're not reversing that damage. And even if we were to stop the harm tomorrow, we know that we have another 50 to 75 years of the syndrome in effect because of the pollution in the air at this point, the emissions that we've already seeded. We also know that we live in a world with incredible acts of brutality and police aggression, especially around marginalized peoples, peoples of color. We see the inhuman immigration policies that are being put out that are tearing communities and families apart. There's heartbreaking audio in the Democracy Now! Episode this morning of a woman being taken by ICE in front of her daughter, who is screaming in desperation as she loses her mom. Mm-hmm. All of this is going on, and we know it. Mm-hmm. We would have to be doing some very, very deep denial to be unaware. And yet, we must continue our work in the struggle for a better world. We must continue to live our lives. We don't get a dress rehearsal. This is it. This is where we are. How, Barbara, how do we stay engaged? How do we find joy? How do we share that joy in a world that is in such desperate straits? That is the that's the nexus of this conversation. And we can unpack it slow. I don't mean to just, dump it all on you in the first minute and a half. But
that's not how it feels at all.
But here we are. And I have heard from so many people that, I can't listen to the news anymore. It just depresses me. Mm. Well, I understand taking a media break now and again. I understand the need to envelop yourself in poetry and music. But you can't ignore it for that long, right? Mm-hmm. Because it is the world in which we live. And if we don't know what's going on, how can we make it better? Mm-hmm. So the trick is that balance. How can we be aware and not be overwhelmed?
Right. So I'm just going to imagine, I'm feeling in my own body the tightness in my heart, just even as you gave this essentially a litany of what's actually happening in the world. I'm feeling this sort of tightness and this kind of tightness in my throat. So I just want to imagine that possibly that our listeners might mm-hmm. be having this experience also, that everything that you're saying is true, and how do we be with that? And so I'm going to actually invite myself and you and anybody else who's listening to sort of breathe into your body. Mm-hmm. And to just allow the breath to help to loosen that up, to take some deep breaths so that we can remember that we are sitting here in essentially what's a form of trauma, right? It's a collective trauma. And trauma work, and I'm no expert in it, but trauma work, essentially, one of the main pieces of trauma work is bringing yourself back into your body in the present moment, back into your breath. And I need to do that every day, pretty much. And some of it is, a lot of us have had trauma in our lives anyway, for a variety of different reasons. But we also have this pre-traumatic experience, too, of being aware of the possibility of a world falling apart in a big way, like forever. So I'm just going to invite us into a space of just kind of trying to breathe and ground ourselves and imagine that we are actually, by grounding ourselves, we're bodies, we're mammals on this planet. We are breathing in air. Most of us have okay air, not all of us, but we're breathing in a piece of the sky that connects us to the universe. And I mean, this is the woo part of how I have to hold myself together mm-hmm. in some ways, is just like bring myself back. It's not that woo, because it literally is a nervous system.
Right. I was going to
say
that deep breath actually invigorates our nervous,
right.
nervous system.
The positive part, the coping part, all that. But for me also, it helps me to envision this as this is me being actually belonging to the world, and belonging to the world in a way so that not only do I belong to these hard facts, to this knowledge, to the beings around us that are suffering, but I also belong to the wisdom and beauty of this world and the life that is here and the creativity that is emergent all the time, whether it be a seed growing out of the ground or the brilliance of a poem or the beauty of an action that has, that has people cooperating with each other. So there's this piece about trying to, as you said, balance and look for that beauty, even in pain, even through the pain. And that can happen on deeply personal levels in very personal circumstances, as well as in these more political circumstances as well. And it's one of those things where, in my experience, I have to practice it when it's not hard in order to get that muscle going of either you want to call it mindfulness or gratitude or looking for beauty when it's easy, practicing that so that when it gets hard, your body and your mind and your heart are prepared to see, to be able to be with all of it, to be fully present. That's a little piece of the sermon. And I actually have a piece of a poem, if you'd be. It's really quite lovely. This is a poem by Rebecca Parker. And I won't read the whole poem, but it's called Benediction, and it's about blessing the world. And this is the middle section. So again, Rebecca Parker, choose to bless the world. The choice to bless the world is more than an act of will, a moving forward into the world with the intention to do good. It is an act of recognition, a confession of surprise, a grateful acknowledgement that in the midst of a broken world, unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery abide. There is an embrace of kindness that encompasses all life, even yours. And while there is injustice, anesthetization, or evil, there moves a holy disturbance, a benevolent rage, a revolutionary love, protesting, urging, insisting that which is sacred will not be defiled. Those who bless the world live their life as a gesture of thanks for this beauty and this rage.
That is incredible. Yeah. It is, to me, staying connected to this world through a grounding practice, the deep breathing, I can't really talk about this without getting woo. I have to admit.
Yeah, we're both pretty woo. So.
And I think listeners to the show, longtime listeners to the show, certainly would expect nothing else. If you're new, welcome to it. We're a little woo sometimes as we discuss the world and the politics there are. Yeah. You know, and again, that deep breath does have that biophysical response. But to me, it is a little bit more than that because that air is shared by everyone. Right?
Yeah,
and I really feel that connection through breath as we share the same air, as we share the same sky, as we become aware of how we are standing or sitting, being on this planet, and come fully into our bodies. As somebody who has PTSD, you know, from lived trauma, being fully in my body is something I really have to work at.
Yes, me too.
And I think that, you know, many of us, whether we have that diagnosis or not, it's easy to be overwhelmed in this society that is so very bent on keeping people alienated and isolated.
Yes. So that makes connection and belonging a revolutionary act. It's an act of resistance against the predominant colonial culture that is dependent on us feeling isolated, being isolated, and focusing on just survival. So I know that there's, you know, I've been in the activist world for a while, and there's a lot of people who just their modus operandi for a variety of reasons is just like, you have to focus, you know, you have to do the work, you have this beauty thing and this whatever, creative arts, you know, it's like not useful. And I beg to differ, because that is essentially continuing. That's the left version, or the, you know, radical left version of colonialism right there, that we separate ourselves from our hearts, that we separate ourselves from the beauty and from each other in order to just, you know, keep working really, really hard, enslaving ourselves in some ways to this ideal. So I'm going to sort of say that, you know, our connecting, our beauty, our creativity is a part of the revolution and a necessary part of the revolution in order to change, decolonize our hearts and minds and bodies as we are moving forward.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I haven't really thought about that as an act of colonizing, mm-hmm. but that essential separation of ourselves mm-hmm. from ourselves. You know, we can only be in our heads. That is the yeah. only thing that matters.
Right.
I would call malarkey on that. Yes, you're
okay.
Right. It's you know, because we are whole beings,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And if we are only allowing ourselves to use one of our modes of experience or our modes of analysis, you know, I don't just analyze in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be informed by my heart.
Right.
I need to be informed by what inspires me and where my spirit is drawn. And how my body's reacting to something. As you mentioned, you know, that there's this litany of horrific things, and we respond bodily. I watched your body posture change as I was reading that. I'm like, oh no, I'm damaging people. You know, and yet that is the paradox in which we live.
Right.
To be aware, to be in body, and to continue, to persevere, to be inspired and inspiring.
Yeah. And to reclaim, I think, when we think about beauty, for example, to reclaim and transform what beauty has traditionally been in this culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
That and artistry and beauty has been sort of named in Western white culture particularly as something that's, it's got a certain, you know, especially around women, you know, what's a beautiful woman and who is an artist? You know, an artist is a professional who's had shows and, you know, has gone, you know, like,
How many gallery exhibits have you had,
et cetera? And so to challenge that, even those, you know, ideas, as we all know, and we've all been doing for decades and decades and millennia, claiming ourselves as beautiful, claiming ourselves as creative, is a part of that process as well, which means embodying mm-hmm. fully.
I think it also means being open to self-love,
exactly.
Which is another big taboo. We're not necessarily supposed to talk about that. We're not supposed to try to spend a lot of energy on self-love. And yet, without loving and accepting the self, how can we form actual relationships, healthy relationships with others? How can we feel the connection with others if we live alienated from our own hearts?
Right. And that is also connected to allowing ourselves to see and embody our power as well. That we see ourselves as capable, as lovable, as powerful, and then also, as you know, once we were able to see ourselves in that vein, we're also able to see that in each other, and that allows for a sense of belonging. That we get to see the beauty and power of people who might not, like, on the surface even like feel that way. You know, the beautiful trouble that we are in with each other sometimes in our collective endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe somebody can be annoying you, but they, you know, that they have a particular gift to offer the world, just as you do. And so there is a piece around that I am continuing to practice, and not always successfully, but to sort of really try to see each other as lovable and beautiful, even in difficult times, which is, you know, part of the process.
That is a process.
Yeah.
and it is such an important piece of the whole.
Yeah.
You know, I think we often, you know, we kind of succumb to cynicism.
Mm-hmm.
We don't kind of succumb to it. We, this culture especially, just delves straight into cynicism. I've heard so much in radical culture over the last few years. Well, I found this particular trend really, really sad. I was a part, heavily involved in Occupy Portland, which, you know, for any of a number of reasons, the original Occupy ended, transformed, evolved, did whatever it did. And many of the folks that I had met during that time, not all, but many, became embittered afterwards. There was a terrible amount of infighting about why it failed,
right.
Which I think is an arguable point. I don't think it failed. I think it transformed into 1,000 small groups of people being active and working on pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
But that's a whole nother point. Why it failed, and it's this group's fault, it's that group's, it's this method's fault, it's this... And that's why these folks will never be involved in any activism again. It was all a bunch of waste of time and just personally aggravating. And so was everyone in the movement.
Yeah.
And that's such a bitterness. How do we, when we see something that feels like defeat, mm-hmm. how do we stop with the bitterness and the self-blame and the blaming others? Perhaps a healthier way to go about it would be a critique, yeah. or as we look at, giving each other feedback. But how do we stay out of that real negative space of cynicism, and that's what you get, and you can't expect anything better?
Right. So I just want to frame that bitterness was born out of an extreme hopefulness mm-hmm. and desire for goodness in the world. That's the piece of, like,
yes.
the bitter person is somebody who was deeply hurt because they were so hopeful and so full of ideals and so wishing and wanting for love and connection and, you know, change, justice, you know, that justice. So bitterness in some ways is sort of the anger of that disappointment kind of being turned inward, and a choice of separating because you don't want to be hurt again.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be hurt in that way because it was such a disappointment. So I want to honor the hearts of those bitter people who just were so hopeful and so inspired, and then are protecting themselves. I mean, and so one of the pieces I would say is that being willing to be vulnerable in that, you know, vulnerability is a skill set that is a tough one for, mm-hmm. especially for people who've been traumatized and for other, you know, a lot of other reasons, to be vulnerable and to also look outside of, into a longer story. Which is hard to do. So that Rebecca Solnit does a lot of great writing on this thing about how there's longer stories than what we're living in right now. There's longer stories in this moment. In the really big, you know, the story of the cosmos is, you know, we're a blip in the screen, honestly.
Right.
The Earth is a blip in the screen. We don't have to go there. That's not an excuse for not doing anything. But, you know, but there are longer stories. And, you know, you can cite all kinds of stories about the women doing, voting rights who never, ever lived to see women vote in the United States. But they had an intention. They had a clarity of intention and understanding about what they were on the earth to do. To be able to sort of see the as you were saying, sort of the beginnings of new groups and new ideas, and maybe an individual who's sprung into awareness and is now, you know, doing some other beautiful work in the world, that piece is as much a success as not having the revolution happen in 4 or 5 months or whatever. You know, I know it was longer than that, but so there's a piece about this larger view, and also this piece about forgiveness and vulnerability and idealism that we need to just sort of be sweeter with ourselves about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to remind people you are listening to KABU. We're your community radio station. This is Positively Revolting, a show that happens every Friday morning, 8 to 9 a.m. I'm Ani, your host, and this morning my guest is Barbara Ford. She is a local community organizer, activist, artist, singer, and oh so much more. And we're pleased that she is with us again. You can join this conversation. We would love it if you did. Please give us a call at the studio. It's 503-231-8187. Also, if you are interested in following along throughout the week, you can also follow us on Facebook, like our page there. That would be Facebook, Positively Revolting. And on the Twitterverse, we are Positive Revolt. Folks have been asking, I have to say, about Lynn, my beloved co-host. And I have to say, she is still actively putting together our Facebook page. She is still contributing in this manner. And so you can stay in touch that way as well with Lynn. And on we go, 503-231-8187. Again, join us in this conversation. I want to shift gears a little bit as we're looking at the bitterness, the sorrow, the pain that comes from the disappointment of not having achieved a better place for us all to be in. let's talk about what inspires us to stay active. Mm-hmm. You know, I've often said, you know, damn, it would just be easier to listen to some really good music, watch the sunset, and enjoy really good, depending on my mood, you know. You know, I can drink Mai Tais till the end of my days, mm-hmm. or perhaps a really nice cup of tea mm-hmm. till the end of my days. Mm-hmm. You know, and but that would be so unsatisfying, and mm-hmm. I would feel like I've let down my heroes, right?
Yeah.
There are the wonderful people who have been carrying the torch, the batons, in the intergenerational relay race of remaking our society and remaking our world. For me, I find inspiration. Also, this is coming on the tail end of International Women's Day, which was yesterday, a day of International Women's Strike this year, which is very exciting, but a day that celebrates women and honors women's our heritage, our history, our culture, our music, our all of it. And so in thinking about this show, I was thinking about the forebears, the foremothers of my heart and soul, mm-hmm. Emma Goldman, mm-hmm. you know, coming straight into probably the first position there as I, you know, she really rocked my world when I first read her writings, and I thought, wow, I wish there were still anarchists. I think if there were, I'd be one.
Yeah.
And, you know, a few years later, actually figuring out, oh, it wasn't just a historical movement, that we are still in existence. Who inspires you?
Right now, I would say, well, there's some obvious people. I have a teacher, Joanna Macy, who has essentially rocked my world in ways that, you know, is just continues to reverberate in my heart, because she is somebody who's dedicated her life to essentially helping us all to stay present to the world, and has teaches ways and practices of doing that. So big ups to Joanna. And then there are just so many, particularly artists, musicians, the people that I, some of whom I know personally and some of whom I don't. I mean, there's some unsung heroes in the world. Like, I want to call up, for example, I was just talking to my friend who brought me here about David Solnit, who is essentially a servant leader in various movements. Essentially, he's an arts organizer, and you've probably seen his work if you've seen anything about any protest anywhere, whether it's at Standing Rock or New York City or with the Mokelumne workers in Florida or in Cochabamba, Bolivia, with people in the water rights or in Paris. Or he's a person who actually creates arts events where people make multiple beautiful banners and puppets and other things. And he works with other artists. He would be the first one to say, it's not just me, it's all these other amazing artists. And that's the piece, is that he owns his gift without needing a lot of attention. And so he's somebody who's been sort of in my heart today as I think about, I mean, I just saw his work somewhere else, and I just said, yep, that's his way of making letters, of course, you know, that's his form of calligraphy on that poster over there. And so he's somebody that I he's a friend of mine also, so I just really am grateful for all I've learned from him as an arts organizer, and also these gifts that he just keeps offering the world and all these amazing movements. I mean, he's not tied to a particular movement. He's tied to offering his gift in service to the world.
He is somebody who really does see the biggest picture.
Yes.
And all of the connections. There was a saying, there is still a saying, all struggle is the same struggle.
Right.
As we work for social justice, we know intersectionality exists, right? And it certainly exists in the movement for remaking our world.
Right. I also just want to sort of invoke, bringing up Joanna right now, there's a crew of people who are facilitating the work who are actually challenging some of the precepts of the original work that reconnects, because it's born out of a white woman brought up in white culture. And so there's a whole movement right now around how to change the work so that it is more inclusive, sort of. It's called decolonizing the work that reconnects. And mm-hmm. so there's some brilliant people of color and white people working together right now to really examine that work. And I'm so humbled by that myself, and so inspired as well to people who are really looking at work that's changed many people's lives and yet also was problematic. And that we are able to look at that and say, just like with Occupy, these are some problems with this work. It's beautiful work. It doesn't work for everybody. Let's see how we can adapt it and change it and move it. And that is part of evolutionary process. And Joanna's and other people's acceptance, oh yeah, we really need to do this, that piece, the blessing that she has given to,
and
okay, I
huge.
Hear that, and let's make this better, and let's see who else we can reach and connect to, and let's do less harm with the work.
That is so huge, because, you know, that is the healthy response, right?
Yeah.
As we realize that being progressive means that we're moving things in, mm-hmm. you know, that things should not be static, that we should always be learning from what we have done, adopting, adapting, and improving, and that we, in order to do that in the best way, need to share with people with different experiences than our own,
right?
And to see how we can re-envision how we can notice where the problems are, you
right.
know, in the first place, and to, speaking as a white person, stepping out of the centered position,
right,
listening to people of color for leadership, and supporting their voices, amplifying in every way I can. That's important work. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important to stay open and to continuously adopt, adapt, and improve based on that feedback, based on attempts to decolonize. How do we stay open to that, which is so very necessary if we actually want to make a positive difference,
right?
Rather than getting into that reactionary, defensive, oh no, I didn't mean it that way.
Right. Yeah, I've been actually thinking a lot about how we can metabolize our fragility, white fragility, mm-hmm. my white fragility, into gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of, I mean, you and I have talked a lot about this idea of radical gratitude, and that's a new version of, that's a new connection to gratitude that I am practicing now.
Talk about that a little bit more. I think this is hugely important.
Yeah, so, you know, any of us who are in this movement have had to figure out how to be with decentering ourselves, with really listening to the pain and the harm that we have participated in. And so initially, of course, I'm human. And so I can remember moments when I was like defensive or whatever. And but somehow I had to find my way through that to listening for the truth and letting it not be about me, and finding and actually eventually just deeply appreciating the effort and the courage it takes for people to challenge folks that they've had to do their whole life, and I'm just one in a stream of an entire culture. So there's a piece about, oh my God, this is such a gift to be called in, ideally, you know, to be called in to a fullness of humanity and to a worldview that just needs to continue to change and to transform itself. And for me, I use metabolize because there's a piece about not getting rid of a part of ourselves, but a changing, transforming, metabolizing some part of myself, because I was born into this culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm listening for the times when I am able to just so, not just from a distance, because it has to also happen in person, but starting with the easier part of just really deeply grateful for the challenges to this work that I love so much, for example, the work that reconnects, and really listening and saying, ah, okay, I am so grateful that you're willing to even say this to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so grateful that you're willing to step up and that you want to make it better, that you want to make it more accessible, not wrong, but better.
Mm-hmm.
And me, not wrong, but better.
Right.
So that's a different stance, and it takes some practice, but it's a stance of being more whole within any larger community. To be able, just like you want to be in your primary relationships, right?
Mm.
You know, in your intimate relationships, you want to be able to listen to each other and each other's stances and, you know, be clear about certain things about this is who I am, but another, like, be willing to metabolize and change in the context of a relationship to become more relational all my relations, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. that we are to be, that to find gratitude in, again, in that belonging and that connectedness in ways that we hadn't imagined or even like processed before.
Yeah. You see metabolize, I think transform
yeah.
myself is,
yeah.
is the word I connect with around that process. And for me, I really look at the symbolism of fire.
Yeah.
You know, fire can be so very devastating. It's yeah. destructive. It will eat a house. It will eat a forest. It will eat a... And yet what it leaves behind, especially as we're looking at a forest,
yeah.
you know, it has within it the nutrients for the soil. The process of the intense heat helps to bring forth the seeds for the new trees,
right.
That it's a part of the cycle. It is not something to be shunned or afraid of. It is something to look at very carefully. Mm-hmm. It can be harmful,
mm-hmm.
but it is also a very necessary and important part of growth and cyclical renewal.
Right.
And again, you know, without transformation, without changing ourselves, we become stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
And how dull,
right.
how painful
yeah.
to be stuck inside ourselves in one mode of being and seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a tragic loss. I want to invite listeners again to be a part of this conversation. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Don't be shy. Come on in. It is what inspires you? How do you stay present? What work do you find important enough to do that you are able to stay engaged even as we look at the pain around us?
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's important to share our stories with each other. It's important to share our inspirations with each other, our what those moments that feel like victory. Because they have happened, and those moments that feel like, oh my God, we are crushed, because they happen. And how do we stay in that balance? How do we stay in that mix? Please do give us a call and be a part of this conversation. 503-231-8187. My name is Ani. I'm here with Barbara Ford, and we are engaged in this conversation about staying engaged. We were talking before we got on the air about poetry, about music, and one of the songs that always jumps into my head is, as I'm looking at this kind of work, this kind of mood, is Anthem by mm-hmm. Leonard Cohen. And for folks that are not familiar with it, the chorus says, "Ring the bells that still can ring, forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in."
Right.
That I find really inspirational and very hopeful, because so often we feel, at least I feel, like I'm inadequate, mm-hmm. that what I do is not actually going to be the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to not help enough.
Right.
And, you know, the line, "Forget your perfect offering," to me has always said, give what you can. Just jump in there and do it.
Right.
That's, to me, again, that is the essence of staying engaged. We cannot wait for that perfect moment. We cannot wait for that, for us to have all of the answers, because there's not a person yet born that does.
Right. And so the other assumption connected to that is that... it's not about me. There cannot be, I mean, no matter, even if you had your perfect offering, it won't be enough.
Yeah.
It won't be enough, because it needs all of us, mm-hmm. or as many of us as can be available in whatever way we're possible, you know, we're able to. And I mean, essentially, if you use permaculture principles, for example, we all have different gifts, right? We all have different jobs in the world. And so if I do my job, whatever I know my job to be, you know, it can't be the same as everybody else's, because monoculture doesn't work in activism, just like monoculture doesn't work in agriculture. So what do you call a perfect offering? You know, your perfect offering may be to pollinate, you know, and that by itself won't be enough if the earthworms aren't doing their job and the trees aren't doing, you know, whatever. So there's a piece about like getting clear. If you're able to get clear about your particular gifts and offer them in service to the world. And I'm not saying everything is about activism either. I mean, we need the healers. We need the people to take care of the kids. We need, you know, everybody doing something in service. So I'm not proselytizing that everybody has to go get arrested on the train tracks. You know, some of us
but
did.
But if a few more maybe did.
A few more maybe did. But, you know, maybe you'll feel the call and, you know, I've done it a couple times and blah, blah, blah. You know, but there's a piece about understanding yourself as a part of a larger whole.
Yeah.
And that you, and that's not just like in your community, but I don't know how many of you all saw, there was a beautiful list of 60 photographs for International Women's Day that was just women all over the world taking action. Just understanding ourselves as part of a world community, let alone in the Portland or in the thin green line of resistance for fossil fuels and Pacific Northwest or whatever, that, and every single one of those photographs was the embodiment of beauty because it was people coming together to work for justice, to work and to in their full power, you know.
Right, right. And what you were just saying in that knowing your gifts, knowing your part, just reminds me of this wonderful quip that my mother throws out occasionally when I'm visiting my mother. You know, talking about my life as an activist and how we're changing the world and this, that, and the other thing. And my mother will look at me and smile her smile and say, yeah, you know, those that make brownies also serve.
Exactly. I've used that. Yes. I've used some version of that, actually, like making the brownies for the meetings or whatever, tending the gardens or... you know, whatever. Yeah, so
doing the child care.
Praying, you know. I believe, you know, people in monasteries praying for peace are holding a piece of energy that is necessary.
Yeah.
That needs to not go away.
Absolutely.
It needs to not go away.
Well, let's go ahead and welcome some callers into the conversation. 503-231-8187, the number to call if you would also like to join in. Good morning to Chris. You're on the air.
Good morning. I wanted to first thank you guys for this show and all that you've done. And the reason I had to call in is because it sounds like people are depressed and they think that good things aren't happening. And it's just the opposite, specifically with the monetary system. So I did a thesis on the evils of capitalism back in the early 90s. And I never would have dreamed that, you know, anyone would think the same way I did. You know, it was, you were considered crazy. It was, nobody was talking about flaws in our system. And never in my wildest dreams would I have believed that Occupy Wall Street could have happened in just, you know, 40 short years after that time. So it's unbelievable how fast it's moving. Don't give up. There's huge movements all over that the Wall Street people, Occupy Wall Street people made possible. The whole cryptocurrency movement is about the undermining of the financial overlords. There is now talk of retribution for people who have been harmed, right, in South America. South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually going to award monies to the native peoples who were displaced, you know, 100 years ago, 200 years ago. So it's happening. Don't be discouraged. It's so exciting, and that's the biggest thing I wanted to pass on. So thank you. Don't give up. The world is so much brighter and bigger, and it's happening at this accelerated pace. So just reach out and keep on keeping on. So thank you, guys.
Thank you, Chris, for your call. I am going to just point out that serious critiques of capitalism have been happening probably since capitalism it was launched on this planet. But again, I think at this point in the States, certainly more and more people are becoming aware that capitalism is not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
And it's happening, though.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Speaking of a crack in everything, I mean, if you look at our political system right now.
Yes, let's.
That's a giant crack, right?
Right,
that
right.
It is a giant crack. And in some ways, it's merely uncovering what has already been existing.
And that...
What has always been existing, in which some of us of privilege are all of a sudden seeing things that many other people have known for and experienced and seen for a long time. And we're like going, WTF, you know, like,
yeah.
And
yeah.
So there's a piece about the opportunities. I mean, there's also a huge amount of harm being perpetrated on a daily basis.
Yeah. I mean, the pain that is generating is very, very real. And I don't want to diminish that
exactly.
at all.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I get what you're saying, because I have to say, I have face palm many a time as I'm talking to folks who are getting it for the mm-hmm. first time.
Yeah.
And I guess that will be my silver lining. That will be my silver lining takeaway from, encroaching fascism. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
That maybe things really do have to get this dire mm-hmm. for...
Or this universally dire,
I would say that's it. Yeah. yeah. For people to, in fact, be shaken out of complacency. Mm-hmm. Billy Bragg, speaking of inspirational musicians, mm-hmm. has a line that is, as long as you're comfortable, it feels like freedom. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're seeing is an administration so inhuman in mm-hmm. its actions that it has shaken people out of their comfort zones mm-hmm. and out of that complacency.
Right. And so blatantly and publicly inhuman. So that's mm-hmm. the piece, is there's a lot of inhumanity that's happened in previous political situations. And so I think you're right that's a piece. So I'm not saying that this is a gift particularly.
Right.
But I'm saying if it's here, let's use it. Let's really be here with it and understand more deeply. And then figure out, okay, now what am I called to mm-hmm. to do? And it may be the same thing, or you may step it up in some way, or you may give it a different framework, like, let's talk about racism in this workshop, you know, da da da. Mm-hmm. It's just that's a piece that more explicitly that is our response is the gift. Our mm-hmm. response to what's happening can be the gift in this moment. And the ways we are changed and the relationships we form when we're working with people around issues. I mean, the people that I do climate justice work are, you know, they're amazing. I'm so inspired by those people who do crazy things like, you know, restore and paint big buses to take to Standing Rock, and you know, as medic tents, as medic buses, and you know, people who are, you know, willing to give themselves up for arrest, or willing to dress up in as Kate Brown and go stand on those Capitol steps, or whatever it is, you know, mm-hmm. to try to move things, to keep moving things in the direction of the chi activists. And so there's and that's a beautiful thing. I mean, if you think about just what happened with the Fenneca here, there was so much beauty, intentional and otherwise, at those events. I was crying when I was watching that scenario, and mm-hmm. I knew people who were involved, and it was like such a heart-building experience.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely. Let's go ahead and talk to Frank. Good morning, Frank. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good program.
Thanks.
Yeah, just really appreciate your focus. The whole theme of relationship, close allusions to Nona LaDuke's work on all our relations. I just wanted to kind of pose a question. I think a lot about what it is that perhaps could be a true common ground for folks, even when we, at the same time, we're confronting the powers, we're confronting. For example, I confront myself as having been part of those who've colonized. But at some level, deep down, we're human beings. We're part of a larger bio-community of Mother Earth. So how do we engage one another, and even across vast differences, for example, across what we call the left and what we call the right, how do we engage as human beings, as part of a larger bio-community, to seek true common ground without... You know, that just becoming a kind of way for another form of colonizing. That's my question.
Mm.
Good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, I'll take a stab at it first. The one thing that I really feel like is we are all, no matter what our political praxis is, we all are on this planet together. We, again, share the air, we share the earth. Without it, we don't live, right? So at the very basis, this is a common point of connection.
Yes.
And so with that, now, of course, people with extremely different views and ideas than mine say that this is a resource to be used up and we'll just go ahead and colonize Mars. We're already well on our way, so we don't really have to, you know, take care of this. And we're only taking care of it until Jesus comes again and we all get raptured. That's, to me, of course, that's like, it's anathema. You know, so how do we then talk across this gap? And again, I try to use the here and now, and try to use the love for our families and children, and try to establish that very human point of connection. But where I have to disconnect, and I do, is when I'm talking to somebody who is so very wedded to hierarchy, to having power over, to denying others not only their own power, but, you know, in some cases, their lives, in the terms of white supremacists, in terms of people who are so vehemently homophobic or transphobic that they would deny us livelihoods or lives. That breaks that connection, and suddenly I find myself unable to talk because I realize I'm talking to somebody who would rather see me dead. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I will try. And to me, the basic point of connection is we share this planet. We share our resources. We share love for our families. We are human together. If they deny my humanity, then kind of all bets are off.
Mm-hmm. That's very, very well said. I see the sense I have is that is a call to a profound common ground. If we're not very, very careful, we can find ourselves, I'm imagining, not necessarily myself, I'm a white, heterosexual, professional male, I teach college, and I can imagine many, many people who are in situations where that call to common ground, if you could put them face-to-face, frankly, with a bully, with an oppressive situation. And so what you described in discerning that distinction, I think, is a very important point to articulate.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I would say, that's a tough one for a lot of people. And again, we can't all be doing the same thing. We aren't all called to the same work, but there are people who are. And so there's some beautiful people doing some great work of challenging. I mean, there's some story I read about this African-American man who purposely goes and tries to make friends with Klans people, and is like 60 Klans people have quit the Klan as a result of this guy's calling, mm-hmm. which is amazing. So mm-hmm. I guess one other thing that I want to say is that there's so many different ways to participate in, and I think that there is something to be said about, you know, we all live in the, we live in silos. Portland's... Mm. Inner Southeast Portland, whatever you will, mm-hmm. is a silo of largely, although we certainly are having other different people, I know.
And yet you have these conversations and you go, wow, we're not so bubbly after
right,
all.
Right, we're not so bubbly mm-hmm. after all. But so I want to say something. I want to give a shout out to my partner and other people who have actually been getting involved with emergency prep, mm-hmm. Because that's just organizing in your neighborhoods to prepare for the big earthquake or whatever. I mean, mm-hmm. in her mind, it's like, the whatever part is the most important part, whether it's the markets collapse or you know, things get so bad that, you know, war or whatever, that the mm-hmm. it's the same preparation, which is right. organizing neighborhoods of people, figuring out who has what tools, what skills, and being prepared for the earthquake or whatever. And so that actually puts us in more proximity with people who are different, but who are coming together in service to community. And there's people who are working on like decolonizing that, you know, like how do we include immigrants in that process mm-hmm. and how do we get to know each other in preparation for that so that we aren't strangers to each other. And people are having dinners together to do that. So I want to lift up in particular Rebecca Solnit's book, A Paradise Built in Hell, which was in historical sightings of different crises that happened from Katrina to the San Francisco earthquake to a bunch of other you know, circumstances where people had no choice. Something terrible happened, a bomb went off or something, mm-hmm. and everybody had to come together, and it didn't matter what the personal perspectives were. We were just all treating each other as human beings who wanted to survive together. And how that grew a kind of a grassroots sense of power and grew connectivity in so many ways. So some people make it their spiritual practice. Other people, you know, have other things that they're focusing on. It's a tough one, but I think that there's many opportunities, even on a daily basis, as we're riding the bus with each other, you know, to just even if you don't have a conversation. For me, sometimes it's a practice of mine to just look into the faces of people that I'm on the bus with and sort of see them as, you know, a part of the universe. Or, you know, I have a friend who talked with, Ram Dass. Oh. And she talked with him about this issue, and he said, well, when you look in someone's face, just see them as another face of God. And that's, you know, you can change the language however you want to around that, but it's true, you know, that we're all here and we're part of the world and in some ways a part of each other, come hell or high water. And
yep.
Yeah.
True that. Let's thank you very much, Frank, for your call this morning.
You're welcome.
We have just actually, gosh, we have like 5 minutes left. Let's go ahead and talk to Mike real quick. Mike, are you there?
Hey. First of all, you guys inspire me. I heard Teresa read from his memoirs on the bus yesterday, and you guys inspire me. I recently moved back to the coast, so I've been there, so I only come up here very rarely. But one of the things I think if we have heroes, and a librarian gave me a button one time that said, read books, fight evil. And
nice.
I think that's real powerful because I find that people don't read enough, and they don't read opposing issues a lot. And some of my heroes are as a white man, some of my heroes are like John Trudell and Buffy St. Marie. And I think the indigenous viewpoint for me has really brought me a perception of my heart and my spirit, and as well as my mind. I think white people dwell in their mind a lot, and they need to learn heart. Like Buffy St. Marie has an album out that's called Power in the Blood, and they talk. That's where your courage comes from. That's where your ability to move comes from, is your heart, and it's very structural. It's very normal, you know, and spirit is like a karma connection to life or to the life force or to whatever it is.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'd like to leave you guys with is back earlier, my t-shirts had a lot more hammers and fists on them and stuff like that. But there was a t-shirt I had that it was from the Art and Revolution Convergence, and it said, art is not a mirror with which to reflect society, but a hammer with which to shape it.
Yes.
Yes. It's a wonderful thing.
Okay, I love
Mike,
you guys.
Thank you so much for your call. I'm just going to add real quickly, as a white person who is very interested in actually knowing my indigenous roots, right? John Trudell makes the point that everyone is indigenous, and that the colonizers, the Europeans, the sickness started in Europe, and we colonized ourselves first, mm-hmm. right? So I want to encourage you to actually look at your own rootedness, because as white people, we sometimes have a tendency to take from other folks that which we feel emptiness inside ourselves. And so I just want to throw that out there also as a you know, couple of words this morning. Thank you so much for your call. We have one last caller to squeeze on the air. We have a minute left to do it. I can't believe this hour has flown by. Margaret, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, this is an exciting moment in the sense that we're talking about the oneness, the hopefulness of oneness. And I have a practice that I've learned 30 years ago that brings us into oneness on a daily basis, even a moment-to-moment basis. It's in our hands. It's called Jinshin Jitsu, which I became exposed to in 1988. And it's I myself have experienced PTSD from coming from alcoholism and waking up in the default position of mood of anxiety, disorientation.
We have 30 seconds, Margaret.
Okay, so I want to talk about harmonizing with our source and a technique called Jinshin Jitsu and a website that is jsjinc.net or a book called The Touch of Healing that it's in our hands.
Margaret, thank you very much. We're going to have to end it there. Thank you for your call. I'm glad you got in there at the end and to share that information of what's working for you. We could go on, obviously. I think there's a need to go on for hours, and yet our time is up. Barbara, thank you so very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Ani.
And we'll be back next week celebrating the equinox. And you know, KBOO's Kickstarter campaign, it's going on till midnight tonight. I want to thank everyone for being amazing and for getting us to the $20,000 magic money goal. Thank you, Bill, for your contribution right there at the end. Longtime KBOO volunteer to make sure that we met that goal. You can help us stretch it. Please keep sharing that information in your social media feeds, kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Do that today because we only have till midnight tonight to see how much we can raise to support your community radio station, KBOO. Thanks for listening, and the beloved community up next with John Shuck.
Hear us saying thank you for donating to KBOO, but really you are donating through KBOO. When you donate, you activate hundreds of threads that radiate out from the KBOO hub that reach out into our web of communities. You activate the obvious core, which is our vast menu of programming, but each of those programs reaches an audience, and each of the people in the audience get to hear the message, a message that you helped pay for. That is a lot of people. You may not realize just how profound your donation really is, but the communities do, all of them, and they appreciate it. Invest in the future by supporting us on Kickstarter today. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. This is the last day we have to make our goal of $20,000. Thank you for supporting KBOO in reaching that goal.